Hi there, welcome to Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon. I'm here with my brother Kevin today. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Brandon.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Entering week forever of
Yes.
the I can't even remember what it's called anymore. Stay in place.
You're right, sheltering in place.
Shelter in place. See, I knew it was an
Sipping.
S word. I just know we're sipping, so I couldn't remember what the S word was. Yeah, I'm doing all right. It's the weeks are all starting to feel the same.
Yes.
And anything within all that sameness, anything different for you guys this week? Anything new for you?
We did go. We went and saw. Well, okay. Your mother needed a printer
Oh,
for
nice.
working at home.
Sure.
And of course, we have an extra printer here because why not? If you need any extra fax machines or cords, we can probably help you out with that too. But
Oh, God, so many cords, yes. I do need an extra fax machine. Can you guys bring me one? Okay, great. Thank
yeah,
you.
we'll be there
We'll talk
later.
about that afterwards. Okay, cool.
So we decided to take her over a printer, and also, you've probably heard that mom and dad have some kittens now.
So excited.
They are incredibly cute.
Are they?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I love cats, so.
Okay. So you like cats.
I do.
And yeah, see, I must be the odd man out in our family. I don't know if it's just because I'm super allergic to them, but the personality of cats really turns me off.
How so?
I just don't like it. Cats seem like
It's always good to
there
have an
you go.
informed opinion. That's
I just
great.
don't. Cats, I just can't connect with them. Maybe that's the problem. The problem is I can't connect with cats. Because as soon as I see them, like my throat starts to close up. So that feels like a problem. Sort of a barrier between the two of us. But also I just don't understand the cat, like, independence to the point of apathy thing. I don't get it, so
Well, that's the difference between you and me.
I guess it is.
I am independent to the point of apathy, so
There you go.
yeah. I think these cats are funny. They can be very funny, engaging. They can be, whimsical.
Okay. I'm gonna
I mean,
believe you.
I think dogs are okay, but I feel like dogs are just always now. We don't want to have a conversation about cats and dogs. I feel like it's a conversation everybody has
I don't know that
on the
everybody
internet.
has it. I think it's okay. Were you going to
I think the
say
dogs are
dogs are
just,
too needy?
they are much needier,
Yeah,
yes.
I agree with that. This is why ultimately I've realized I'm not a pet person.
But dogs are more companionable. So, I mean, it's not like
Yes.
I don't like dogs. I just don't know that I would want to actually have a dog or a cat at all.
Right. Yeah. Well, I will
Just
say
too
this is
much
the thing. So, and obviously,
responsibility.
we had a dog. I think probably some of the people listening know we had a dog for like 12 years. She was a service dog for Zach, and loved her. And at the same time, she's been gone for almost a year now, and it's a lot less effort for me. So, having the dog was a lot of work. I mean, it was a lot, and I don't just mean like the cleaning and the feeding and all that. I mean, like relationally, like emotionally, there was a lot of work going on. The dog was, Gemini wanted a lot of affection. She wanted, and she's very attentive. You know, if you're feeling down or she's there and she's on that. And sometimes I was just like, I just want to be left alone by the people and the dog, all of you. So I think like the dogs are like a lot of relationship, and then cats feel to me like it's so little relationship that why bother? Like what?
But there is more than that. I think that's a little bit of a cliched point that cats are that ambivalent to their people.
Well, and like I said, since I'm not their people, I'm going off of just what I see sort of from a distance. But, yeah. So you think Martin that cats and people cats. End up having more relationship?
I think they do.
All right.
I think as long as you have, you adjust that expectation for what that relationship is going to be. Okay. But I think there are cats who are dog-like, you know, who are much more relational.
Okay.
I just prefer, and maybe it's also, this is a function of being deathly allergic to cats and dogs, is that I enjoy seeing them, other people's pets.
Sure.
I'll watch some cat videos, sure. It's a good time. It's heartwarming.
Oh, which brings us, you know what, I got a media reference for you.
Ooh.
Do you know what Pluto TV is?
I've seen the app, but I've not done anything with it.
Okay. So Pluto TV has got a bunch of, it's all free channels.
Okay.
And some of them are completely dedicated to shows that people like to binge. So they're the one that I will watch like any time that I'm just like, well, I don't have anything else to do. They have a Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel that 24 hours a day is just running another episode of MST3K. And then another one. And then another one.
Wow.
So, yeah, you can drop in anywhere you want. It's pretty great. So they have things like that. But they also have a channel that is called Cats 24/7.
Hmm.
And all it is cat videos. It's stuff from, that's culled from like America's Funniest Videos, and it's stuff from other sources, and it literally is just cat videos all day.
That sounds entertaining.
Yeah. They have a dogs 24/7 too, I think, and I think it's a different vibe altogether. I haven't tried to do like a deep watch of both. Maybe that's a future episode. We do a deep dive into each of those and then cleanse our
brains.
Cats,
I think, are entertaining in videos. So cats do well in the long form.
Yeah.
They'll do interesting things or have interesting behaviors.
Falling in a fish tank, things like that.
Right. Knocking things off of a table or a countertop. That's my favorite. But dogs, I think, do well in the still image.
There you go.
They make funny faces or...
Yes.
You know, do cute or adorable or endearing things. This is an entirely scientific determination that I've made.
Yeah, where'd you go? You didn't spend a lot of time around Gemini. I will tell you this, when you talk about like clearing things, one of the virtues of her height and the type of dog, she was a chocolate lab. You know, they've got this big, thick tail, right? Big, thick, heavy, strong tail. She could clear a coffee table like so fast. She would just stand up and just be like, and her tail would sweep across, everything's on the floor. It's great.
But that was inadvertent, right?
Oh, completely accidental. No, because she was just standing up to get your attention. She's like, and then just, oh, what happened? And it's like, you know, oh, did my butt do that?
Yeah, I like the idea of cats being like, not here.
Yeah, no, they do it on purpose, right? They're just like, this is my space now. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it was always my space and you forgot temporarily. Allow me to remind you.
So, but these kittens at Mom and Dad's were quite adorable.
Okay.
They look almost exactly the same, which for some reason adds to the adorability factor when you're, engaging with both of them.
Uh-huh.
So they were fun.
Good. I'm confused by the fact that I thought Mom and Dad were also allergic to cats.
Mom certainly is.
Yeah.
And she says that, yeah, it bothers me some, and some days it's okay, which means that she's probably on a respirator.
Probably. Right? Probably, yeah. She's managed to punch herself straight into the category of people that we need to watch out for extra right now. So, yeah. Boy.
They're trying to... They brought them into the house because they want to make them adoptable.
Yes, of course. I don't believe that for a second. I believe...
Same reason they brought us into the house, right?
Correct, right. And they failed at that one, too. I don't believe that, though. I believe Mom is selling it off of that, but I'm pretty sure that Dad brought them in the house because he wants cats. That's why Dad brought them in the house.
Yes. I feel bad for Dad. This is a feeling I've had, you know, over the years. Dad very much enjoys having a pet. Mm-hmm. He tells endless stories, right, about his dogs growing up.
Yes.
Pokey, I think, who, when he and his brother Leon turned over a abandoned car in their yard.
Yeah.
This story already has layers, doesn't it? and a sure bunch does. Of snakes. There's Missouri, a bunch of snakes came out, right? And Pokey was just going around and snapping their necks because the snakes were going to attack Dad and Uncle Leon, and Pokey got bit a few times, and then Pokey went down to the river and buried her snout in the mud.
Yeah.
And our grandfather would go down and check on her once in a while to make sure she was okay, and then like a week later, she came back and she was fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
That's actually the only story I've ever heard him tell about the dogs. So.
Really?
It is. I've heard that story a lot of times, but that's the only one I've heard.
But that's the sort of story you would think would have been like from, you know, the 40s or 50s, some sort of, you know, like, that would have been a young adult novel at the time, you know.
For all we know, he never even had a dog, and he took that from a young adult novel.
That's possible.
Since it's the only story I've heard. Makes me wonder.
Maybe the other dogs were less heroic.
Maybe.
I don't know what to
say. Maybe they were. I'm just saying, I think possibly he never had any dogs at all. And he's making it up. It's a cover story. It's like when I used to always cover for the fact that I didn't know, like I'd never seen The Wizard of Oz. And I would cover for that by just, like, dropping into a conversation casually that I, you know, the reveal that it's a dream always blows my mind. Because that was the only thing I knew about the movie.
You know, I had never seen The Wizard of Oz either.
Oh, wait, did I just spoil that for you?
No. Just this week. Just this week we watched The Wizard of Oz.
So, it was very close. I almost spoiled it for you.
No, I mean, the funny thing is, The Wizard of Oz is such a part of popular culture.
Yes.
That there were no parts of the movie, even though I've never seen it, that I was not familiar with. There was nothing that surprised me in the movie, other than the fact that it had really bad pacing, and it seemed that they jumped from... They'd made these, like, kind of, you know, logical jumps.
Sure.
Without really leading you up to that. Now, granted, the movie was made 81 years ago, and...
Sure.
You know, it's...
Well, it's one of the it's one of the less realistic science fiction movies. We were talking about sci-fi movies earlier, but, yeah. Can we think of... Now, there's a question.
Okay.
Is it a sci-fi movie? You got a robot.
It's not a robot. It's a tin man.
It's a metal man. I think it's a robot.
It's a fantasy movie.
Okay.
It's not sci-fi. You have a straw man. Not a straw man, but not like a...
Scarecrow.
Not a disingenuous argument. A scarecrow.
Maybe my argument's a straw man. You have a cowardly lion.
Right, talking lion, who barks. I noticed that too. The lion barks. I was
just confused.
Thrown off by that. I mean, I had to figure in 1939 people had observed lions by that point, right?
No, the first lion was observed in the wild in 1973. Up until then, they were just a myth. Are you shaking something in the background there?
No, that's Spot drinking water.
Okay, cool.
From his water bottle.
Nice. Hello, Spot. All right.
Oh, yeah. Hi, how you doing? I'm drinking right now.
don't talk and drink at the same time, Spot. Also, whatever. Don't talk because you're an animal.
You can't tell me what to do.
I can, and I will. I can't enforce it, but I can tell you what to do. So,
okay. And I can ignore you. So,
that's exactly right.
Perfect.
That's how this game is played.
Alright.
Well, that was revealing. That was quite an exchange there.
It's good. got people behind the scenes a little bit there. So, okay, so you just saw The Wizard of Oz. Yeah, I think you're right. It's a fantasy movie. It's not a sci-fi movie. Mm-hmm. Although, again, you got that Emerald City. You got a... yeah, I guess it is. There is no science in there. Well, meteorological science. That's so Tom Skilling would say that it's a sci-fi movie, right?
No, I don't know that he would.
No?
No. There's a lot more fire in the movie than I thought there would be, too. It's quite something.
How about the flying monkeys? Are they... I mean, that's nightmare fuel right there, those faces, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I assume those were people in hellish monkey costumes.
I don't know.
But to be honest, they're pretty effective. Those costumes are the best in the movie, if you really want to look at it from that perspective. I could not quite tell that it was a person in a costume. I thought it was some sort of freakish monkey from the pits of hell.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know. I can't look at it long enough to really discern and tease it out. Because I look at it, I'm like, oh, God. Whew. Yeah. Although the other great costume, Toto. Toto is actually played by a cat. So.
That's a little known fact. You've probably spoiled it for somebody.
I did. I'm sorry. I'm really committed to the callback. That's my issue there. So, okay. So you just saw. Where were we going? Start talking about Wizard of Oz.
Because you were saying that Wizard of Oz was a science fiction movie.
Oh, and I was.
But I don't know what even led you into it.
Yeah. I was saying that I used to reference that because I hadn't seen it.
Turns out
I saw it earlier than you did, but I hadn't seen it. But I don't know if you ever had this experience. I had people who would be like shocked. You've never seen The Wizard of Oz? I was like, no, I haven't.
No, I also had that same people.
And they'd be like, "What's wrong with you?"
When I would tell them I had not seen it, you know, people would say it was on TV every year growing up. I'd say, once every year, I didn't watch TV.
That's right.
There's this whole open. I mean, I think I had seen tiny little snippets of it, but the whole opening scene, which you will know nothing about.
No, I've seen it now.
Oh, you have seen it now.
Now I've seen it, and okay. I thought it was, you know, mediocre.
That whole opening scene leading up to, you know, the prior to the cyclone, uh-huh. The tornado, uh-huh. Prior to is it Aunt May?
Yeah, I think so.
Apparently, just asking once, "Where's Dorothy?" and then not caring anymore and going down into the storm cellar and saying, "Well,
that's right. Well."
Just a niece anyway, I guess. Doesn't matter.
You snooze, you lose.
Leave her out there. But there's, there's probably a good 20 minutes of the movie that I was not aware of at all. But none of that was really all that important in terms of... I don't think that any of that are the sort of things that people reference back to when they think about the movie.
No.
It all kind of starts with the house spinning around in the tornado. Mm-hmm. And then the witch, and then...
Which is a shame, because honestly, I think an underrated performance in that movie is the basket on the old lady's bicycle. There is no comeback for that. No. No, I agree with you. I did. When I finally saw it, I was like, okay, that's fine.
I'm pretty good at this, though. I watched it, and I did not particularly enjoy it. But I think I'm pretty... adept at contextualizing things in my mind. So looking at it as somebody growing up, mm-hmm. up through the 70s, even into the 80s, seeing that on TV when there were far fewer television options, far fewer movie options for that matter, I really feel. And seeing that by a certain age, I think I can see where people would develop an attachment to it, where it would seem magical, where it would seem exciting and interesting.
Sure.
I mean, I'm 47 years old now, and it's 2020. This was not necessarily what the filmmakers were envisioning their audience would have as a reference point.
Probably not, right. No, and I think...
And for the time. And for 1939,
Yeah, absolutely.
In particular, when it switched from the black and white to the color.
Right.
I'm sure there were people in the theaters that just, their minds were smashed. They could not believe it. So.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that when you put it in its context, there's something really dramatic about that, and you have all of those qualities. You have the fact that Judy Garland is, you know, there's a whole generation of people that have got a huge amount of affection for Judy Garland, and so I think some of that is that it was probably really kind of a generational event that then that generation really emphasized to their children, you know, look at how amazing this is. And so then it was received in that atmosphere, and then it keeps getting passed down in that kind of atmosphere. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in the same way that people might do that with, I don't know, people do that with their kids with Star Wars. I did that. We talked about this before. I did that with Josh with Calvin and Hobbes, you know. I mean, here's something that was like, when I saw it, I was like, this is amazing. And that wasn't even understanding, like as a young cartoon reader, how dramatic it was, the way that he was messing with the form. But yeah, I mean, there's, I get why people had a huge reaction once upon a time and why it's, you know, part of the canon of American film, but it just didn't do a lot for me.
Well, just even the on-demand nature of things now.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned Star Wars. Okay, so we saw Star Wars, the first movie, Star Wars, which mm-hmm. I guess is now A New Hope.
Yeah.
Remember, we saw that in 1979.
Mm-hmm.
Or seven, whatever. 77, whatever it came
yeah.
out.
Right.
70, yeah, okay. We saw. And you remember who took us to that? We see that movie?
Wasn't that Grandma?
No, it was Lynn Bawley.
You're right. So I think Grandma took us to the Blues Brothers.
Yes.
Yeah,
so we right. went to see at Randhurst with Lynn Bawley, and he had that big jacked up pickup.
Yes, yes.
And the line getting out of the mall was really long, and he drove over the parkway from the mall parking lot onto then Rand Road.
Yes.
You recall this?
I don't. I recall very little of our childhood.
Yeah, so that... That is really a large part of why when we saw Star Wars, or knowing that I saw it when I was younger, sticks in my head because
sure.
of that particular part of the story. But from that point, okay, so we would have seen that when the movie was in the theater. We would have had no opportunity to see that again for, what was it, another 10 years?
Yeah, like a long time.
Until there were then... you know, videotapes.
Mm-hmm.
There was a certain element to which the scarcity of something.
Yeah.
And the lack of kind of ubiquitous knowledge about something. Because now there is a whole internet devoted to, you know, arcane information about the Star Wars films.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
When we were younger, and this was kind of the whole, there was a lot of things this applied to. Music, even like as a teenager, if you wanted to find new music, you had to buy music magazines and scour through them. You had to go to shows. You had to get then, you know, like catalogs from record labels and pour through those and say, oh, does this seem like something I'd be interested in?
Right.
You'd have to go to the record store and you would choose, you know, I would choose based upon the cover art
yeah.
or something like that. You know, there was a whole different way of having to, there was a lot more mystery
mm-hmm.
to our choices then. And I think it's easy to romanticize that and say, well, that, you know, we had to work real hard for it and blah, blah, blah. I think there's also a real advantage to being able to have things readily available to us and have more information. I don't think either one of those is a, you know, a whole good, but... there was an element to which things were made special because they were harder to come by. Actually, this makes me think of, I'm watching, Eileen and I are watching Tales from the Loop on Amazon.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with this show?
I'm not. I haven't seen it yet.
So are you familiar with, there's a Swedish artist named Simon Stålenhag.
Okay.
Who makes these digital images that take common settings or themes, landscapes, such, and they drop more science fiction or fantastical, you know, anachronistic elements into them. Like you might have an image of a lake, and then there's this large sort of futuristic metal thing coming up out of the lake, where everything else then seems contextually appropriate, and then that is kind of that outlier.
Right.
And so then there's a television series now kind of based on these images and some of the stories that went along with them.
Okay.
Cool. But so we were watching an episode recently, and somebody said, a non-primary character said to the person who was the primary character in that episode, you know, he asked her how her boyfriend was, and she said, "Oh, I don't think we're going to be going out much longer." And he said, "Well, some things are made more special because they don't last."
Yeah.
And this idea that the an impermanence of something,
mm-hmm.
or a scarcity of something, lends it a certain significance or meaning.
Sure.
And I thought that was... That's... Well, it was something that made me think, and I'm not sure that that's... I mean, I don't think that's a universal idea.
Right. Yeah, because some things... I mean, in one sense, you know, nothing lasts, right? Everything comes to an end, and the fact that some things come to an end doesn't make it special, it makes it sad. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I think you're right. I think there are a lot of experiences that we have that, by virtue of their boundedness, like having this set time, then the special part is, especially, well, maybe even, I don't know. Okay, so here's a question. Do you think knowing that something has a short shelf life or an imminent end point makes it more special? Or does that not change anything?
No, I don't think that makes it more special in the moment. So even using the example that the show was using, I don't think, like, going into a relationship, knowing that it's going to end, you know, if you're carrying around that idea, I don't think that would make the relationship more special. I think that would probably inhibit the relationship.
That's interesting.
That idea of, you know, you're almost lending a certain fatalism to it. Well, this isn't going to last. I don't think the idea that that relationship didn't last makes it special. I think perhaps what's being said here is that something become a memory is special in part because it takes us back to something that we no longer have a present-day reference point to, or a present-day connection to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I could see that.
Because it's hard to, well, there's some other cliches, right, that will probably apply here.
Well, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Right. You don't know what you have until you've lost it.
Yeah, right.
Things like that. I think there is some of the way that memory works. I think it's a fairly well established idea that our memories lie to us.
Sure.
And that our good memories are often exaggerations of what really happened at the time.
Right.
In particular, our feelings, our emotions surrounding that. Emotional memories lie to us, whether it's good or bad in some cases, but more often good. We're much more prone to remember, if we wanted something to be successful, if there was something that we had high hopes for I think we're more prone to remember the positives of it. And if there was something that was really painful, then we will remember the negatives of that. Am I saying that in any kind of clear way?
Yeah, yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
I think our expectations affect then what we remember as well.
Well, I think part of it too is, and this is going to seem like a weird analogy, but as well as I understand, and I don't understand all that well, the idea of like file compression. Like part of the idea, as I understand it, is that there is, or like when digital photography, like some of what it does is it'll like interpret what is in some of those extra spaces or pixels. And I think that memory is kind of like that, in that...
That is very much the way memory works.
Will carry parts of it. And so that's where it sort of, it boosts or gooses the part that we're holding most most fully. Again, maybe mm-hmm. the part that's most emotionally resonant for us, right? So we're really, if something, we look back at it and we think of it as a happy memory, we're gonna fill in a lot of the stuff that our memory didn't hold on to with happier hues and elements and some presuppositions, and we're probably gonna even add in some details that really weren't there, and mm-hmm. some of the darker elements are just, we don't remember them, they're gone. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Right, yeah. Right. And I think an interesting kind of side note to this is, for instance, you and I are going to have some, we have a lot of shared experiences.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to hear our stories of those experiences. Like, I've just given my story of us going to see Star Wars.
Yeah. And I truly,
but you didn't remember that part at all.
No, once you said it, I remember that we went with Lynn Bawley, but I honestly couldn't have given you any details about the original scene of that movie. Nothing at all. Mm-hmm. It just didn't stand out for me. But it's funny, because as soon as you said that, when you talked about Lynn Bawley, do you know what the thing is that I remember most about Lynn Bawley?
I don't. I could make guesses, but I'm going to let you.
You could, but... So I remember... So he was also a big football fan. And I think maybe even played, like, semi-pro or something like that. Huge, huge football fan. A big guy. Big, strong guy. And, mm-hmm. And Dad was not a football fan, really. I remember... Lynn taking time with you and I each to help us identify our favorite football teams. Do you remember this?
I don't at all. See, this is interesting.
That's hilarious. So, and as I remember it, it was entirely based on logos. So, the team, and then he got us hats for the team that each of us had identified as our favorite. I remember this because he got, and it was, you know, the this is the mid-1970s, so it's some sort of polyester on the front, and then it's that mesh back for three quarters of the hat, and adjustable, right? And
it's so, like a foam or like it, yeah, or
yeah,
poly material front, yeah.
And so mine was the Houston Oilers,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yours was the Los Angeles Rams.
Yes, I do remember that mine was the Rams.
Yeah.
I think it may have even been that kind of hat. If you remember, it had the logo, and then there was a line above and below it.
That's right.
And just in script, it said then Los Angeles.
Yep.
Right? And then Rams underneath it. And it was like a Rams head.
And you had the Rams head there. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that's what
I think he even got me a Rams sweatshirt at one point, too. When the Rams were in the Super Bowl, is that what they call that? Right. At some point in the 80s, were the Rams in the Super Bowl?
They no, were. Right. No, 1979, I think, they were in the okay. Super Bowl against the right. Steelers.
Yeah, so there you go. And he got me a Rams sweatshirt as well then that I wore on that day. But, yeah, so.
So, see, that's the thing I remember about him.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah, and then he had that Dodge Aspen The race car, the Richard Petty edition, the race car edition. Do you remember this?
No recollection at all.
Oh, man, those were so awesome. I'll have to put up a picture of that as a reference point. But yeah, so, and then I also remember when we still lived in the house in Des Plaines, and there had been a tree in the yard, and the tree was cut down at some point. I have vague memories of the tree being cut down. But he had come over one time, and so I was probably still like 3 or 4. And
the house in Des Plaines, that rental house, we only lived there for 1 year.
Okay,
well, we lived there the year that we were in. That I was in second grade, so you would have been in kindergarten.
Okay, so I was in kindergarten. There you go. And he had come over, and he was sitting on that stump, and I walked over, and he pulled me up on his lap, and I was enjoying the attention, but I had to go to the bathroom, and then I wet myself.
Oh boy!
So I have that as a memory as well. But he seemed to have taken it all right.
But it's good. It's good. Of course, we don't talk to Lynn anymore, so maybe, I'm sure that's not why.
Well, and Mom and Dad have tried to get in touch with him recently, and they've had
no luck,
no success. Huh. It's a shame.
Well, hopefully they'll find him.
I used his brother as a vendor when I worked in the print industry.
Nice.
And people would mispronounce their last name. They pronounced it was like a foil stamping sort of company, and they would always call it Bally Foil, and I was like, no, it's Bally.
Yeah.
Bally. How do you know it's Bally? Because I know the guy.
That's right.
I know. And then somebody finally asked him, he was like, yeah, it's Bally.
Mm-hmm.
He has got people mispronounce his name all the time.
That's right. As long as they pay their bill.
Understand that a little bit.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's do this. Let's take a break for a minute because I want to come back to this, and I want to follow another thread related to what you were talking about there, because I think, well, at any rate, I want to pick that up, and I want to try to take another direction, because that statement felt like there was another interpretation there that I also think is really interesting. All right, we're back. And so the thing I wanted to come back to, Kevin, with that statement, so the statement from, and I want to reference it from the show. I haven't seen the show, but if I got it right, what you were saying is that the character said, some things are more special for not lasting, or it was...
Right, some things are made more special because they don't last.
Because they don't last, right? So what that made, and you were saying it within the context of a relationship, and so, again, I didn't see the show, but what I thought of there wasn't just, and we could actually even come back another time, or come back today, to the piece you're talking about how impermanence, like the fact that things end, means that then we can look back on them, we can treasure them as a memory. But I was even feeling like there's a way to read that or to hear that idea, that in the moment when you realize something isn't going to last forever, you can relate to it in a different way than if you think it's going on and it's never ending. So the reason I thought of that in terms of relationships, I haven't had this kind of relationship, but like I feel like I've heard people talk about this. I've seen this portrayed in different media. The idea that somebody's in a relationship with somebody that they know they don't want to spend the rest of their life with, but that right in the moment, this is fun, or this is pleasant, or this is soothing, or you know what I mean? And
so, right, what you're saying is you've never had a fun relationship.
I've never had a fun relationship.
It's a terrible thing to say.
What I'm really saying.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And I'm really saved by the fact that my wife does not listen to this podcast, right? No, what I'm saying, yeah, so more the idea that, I've heard people say it this way, like, that's not the kind of guy you want to marry, that's the kind of guy you want to date. Right?
Right.
If you think about it, if you're dating the kind of guy you want to date, but you think that you're looking to this for marriage, that's going to end up, it's going to be very frustrating at some point, right?
Right.
Whereas if you're dating somebody that you want to, that's the kind of person you want to date, and you get that this relationship is temporary, then you have the opportunity to be in it, to be in that moment for what it is, and not to layer future expectations on it. Does that make sense?
It does. And I have to imagine that there are people who are better at doing that than others.
Oh, yeah.
I don't imagine I was very good at that. Not that I looked at every relationship and said, this is the person I'm going to marry. But I don't think I ever looked at it as, this is just the right now relationship.
Right. I've heard that somewhere. Somebody said, like, that this isn't Mr. Right, this is Mr. Right Now. Mm-hmm. I don't know what show that was in or what movie, but yeah.
That's a pretty common cultural cliche.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
I'm not out.
I've heard that many, many times.
There you go.
Not referring to me, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Truth. True moment here. When's the last time Eileen said that about you?
I try not to think about
all
that.
All right. It was earlier today, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay.
Probably.
I knew. Yeah. Just before we started the podcast. Anyway. So that's, I mean, I guess that's what I was thinking. That feels like another way, this statement feels like it's true in that when things end, when things go away, then we have the opportunity to relate to it as memory. And mm-hmm. that's special. But that also, if we get that something is temporary, we can relate to it and value those pieces of it and not be putting elements. And again, it doesn't have to be a romantic relationship. It could be a working situation. It could be some sort of collaboration with somebody else, right? Where if you get, we're not going to do this forever. I don't have to solve every problem I'm ever going to have. Me and this other person, or, you know, this situation can have its own sort of messiness to it because I know that it's just for this time. It's just for this point. And then it's gonna go our separate way. And so you can spend more time invested in the positive elements of that and less time trying to solve the things that, frankly, you don't need to solve because they're not going to ultimately matter. Yeah, I think that takes a person to be able to be really in the moment and look at a situation and be able to say, okay, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this for a little while, and then I'm going to stop doing this.
Right. But that also, I think, speaks to, there's a pretty popular theory now in counseling, the idea of learning to be in the moment, to live in the moment, to recognize the moment for what it is. And I think I'm a big fan of that way of thinking. It's not an easy way for me to think always, but I it's something that makes sense to me. And I feel like that probably is the sort of thing that is the sort of thing that lets you get more out of those moments you're having. That keeps you from putting baggage on it that gets in the way of what you're going to experience and take away from something.
Right. I like that. That's well said.
Oh, thank you. It's courtesy of a lot of counsel.
There you go. Counselors. They're not our friends because they're professionals, but they can be very helpful. We had to say that all the time. You know, I was not a counselor, but in my in working for California Community Opportunities, you know, our relationship with the people that we served was not a friend relationship because you don't pay your friends. You don't.
That's right.
We were staff, right? And we would also have some of those individuals, some of the people that we serve, will always, you're my friend, right? You're my friend. And we had to cultivate this language of, well, it wasn't original us, of course, but really cultivate that response that we're friendly professionals. That yes, we like you, we enjoy your company, but ultimately we're in your life because we work for you. And after we don't work for you, maybe then we will be friends. But right now, we're friendly professionals. But actually, it's kind of a fun thing now, because now that I'm not working there, I may actually get to start to relate to some of those individuals as when we get to be, you know, with other people again. I may get to actually relate to some of those people as friends, and I'm looking forward to that.
I'd be curious to know, because I've not had that type of paid relationship. I'd be curious to know how successfully that happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've not been in that. I mean, you've had some experience with that, obviously. I've not. So I don't know what sort of things you end up holding back, what sort of things you kind of recognize but put aside, what sort of challenges there are. I'd be curious to see. I'm sure it has happened, but I'd be curious to see how a relationship looked going from being the paid person who is serving a need, fulfilling a purpose, and then being a person who simply exists by choice.
Right.
Within that.
Well, it's interesting because some of the people I've been in a couple of different jobs where I have that opportunity, right? Where at one point I was in a professional relationship with somebody, and then I'm not a professional in their life. And the reality is, once you're not a professional in their life, it's inappropriate to maintain that part of the relationship. So, like, think about this: when I was a pastor in two different churches, once I was not the pastor of those churches, if the people from those churches came to me and they wanted pastoral services, that's really me crossing a line at that point.
Right.
And so I need to set that boundary and not do that, and be willing to relate to those people as friends or as fellow Christians or just, as fellow travelers, and but not to blur it with that, with the pastoral part of that. And that's important. Now, like with the people that I'm talking about at CCO, honestly, most of the people that I'm thinking of, because of their intellectual and emotional development, I don't think that they think that much about. The couple that I'm thinking of in particular, I'm not sure that they really thought as much about the idea that I was there working for them. And so me now being there will probably feel very much the same to them.
Right.
If I go visit with them, hang out with them, have lunch with them. And some of that was, I think honestly some of that is because I really did try hard when I was in that role to be as friendly a professional as I could be. So, you know what I mean? I tried to have that be as warm and as personal a relationship as it could appropriately be and still be professional.
Right.
And some of that is, it was just because that was easier for me to do, truthfully. But some of it also was that I did want to have that space, that if at some point in the future I wasn't serving those people professionally, there was ground for a personal friendship there. So I think that I can do that, I think most of that, I guess, as having been the professional in a couple of those situations now, I feel like most of the responsibility, or most of the weight in that change of relationship, is on me as the professional, as the former professional then, to make sure that I'm not crossing any of those boundaries. I'm relating to people. Like if I were to go spend time with some of the people at CCO, and then they started to lapse into some of the inappropriate or maladaptive behavior that sometimes happens in their day, I need to relate to them just as a regular person at that point, and not slide into that teacher role that I used to have with them. And I need to let somebody else take that teacher role.
that was some fine podcasting right there.
That was good. We're just leaving the space that we're leaving for you, the listener, to think.
Think of what to say.
Right. Or maybe we were doing like Blue's Clues, where that was our point. We were giving the audience a chance to talk back to us.
I just like that so much about television shows. I need...
Wait a minute, are there more
the
shows?
Makers of these shows... Oh, yeah. I need the makers of these shows to understand that putting something up on a screen and saying, do you see the wrench? That's it. You know, that is not an educational opportunity. The child is not interacting with that in a way where they are trying to find the thing, or that is teaching them something. The child is waiting for you to then say, yep, there's the wrench right there. I mean, it's just because television has limits as an educational tool, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And interactiveness is not one of the ways in which television and education engage well.
No,
where they come together
not.
In an effective way. There's a non sequitur for you.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. So tell me another offender, because I only know about Blue's Clues being like really doing that. They leaned hard into that. What's another show that does that a lot?
I think there's like Paw Patrol and I don't know. There's all these, and it's often these anthropomorphic like cars or construction equipment or something, and then it's, you know, they exhaust me. They exhaust me. And thank God my children are past that age of watching that sort of thing. Oh, you go to a doctor's office and you might see something like that up on a screen and be subjected to it for a little while. Mm-hmm. But since
we live in a ubiquitous culture where it's everything all the time, I can just go find it, right? I could go downstairs and find a streaming service that has some of that nonsense right now. I could watch it.
Oh, you could immediately. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But don't.
But that's not making life better. See, we're right back there. See, some things are better for having a, you know, an end to them. So we had a problem, and our system just shut down in the middle of recording, and so we're going to have to go back and find how exactly the edit's going to play out, but we're kind of at the end of our time, and so we wanted to come back and say so long. Kevin, any last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to reach out to us on our Facebook page, or you can write to us at Sons of the Double Cheeseburger, P.O. Box 555, Weeping Water, Nebraska, 68463.
Wait a minute, did they move the office to Weeping Water?
Yes.
Oh, man, I was hoping it was going to stay in Grand Island. Okay.
We're following the cheap rent, so.
Okay, makes sense. All right, South Dakota can't be far behind. Okay.
All right, until next time.
Yeah, until next time, everybody take care, and stay 6 feet apart.
All right.
Keep washing your hands. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.